Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly podcast focusing on film and television. These are the only awards that really matter. The 2021 HO Awards for film and television. Let's kick off the show. Aaron Peterson. I'm joined today by my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. Happy New Year.
And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
We are done with this cluster frack of a year. God, I love how people just think once 2021 actually turns the dial, everything will be fine. We'll be all good again. Refreshed.
Well, the Academy seems to think so.
Yeah, they sure do. Boy, you're really still bitter about the whole guaranteeing the live event thing.
I mean, good for them, but like, I need some of that hope in my life. And if they can do that, why not South by Southwest? I don't know. I have feelings.
Oh man, I'm with you, right? That's just sadness. Online only this year.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, you know what? If you haven't listened to our HO Awards before, we do ours a little different than other people's. We don't do best male or female. We do just actor. And if you want to follow along, the categories are in the show notes or the website. So bring it up and let us know what your picks are on social media. We like to know what everybody else thinks. How we do it is we don't pick just one in each category. We each get our own winner because it's participation trophy time here at the Hollywood Outsider. So we all get to pick our winners in the category. But at the end, we combine ours with listener picks from our Facebook group. And we determine what was the HO TV series and HO movie of the year. Whew. I'm excited. On to the awards. Okay, before we get to specifically TV and movies, what was your best TV or movie watching experience of 2020?
To me, the best movie experience or TV watching experience has to be when I got to go see Tenet in the theater. The theater had been closed for several months. I only saw one other movie in the theater in the span of time in which the theaters had reopened in, which was New Mutants, which was okay-ish, but great for being a first time in a theater in a long time. But Tenet was something...
Hang on, I love that difference. It was okay-ish, but it was great for being in a theater. Woo! Weird flip.
Tell me you didn't feel the same way about it.
Yeah, I pretty much felt the same way. I'm like, wow, this movie's so much better than it deserves right now.
So, yeah, I mean, it was okay-ish. But hey, we were in the theater, and that made me feel good and special. Tenet, on the other hand, which was, I'm glad I got that shot out of the way so that I can go into the theater clear-headed for Tenet and really just, like, fall into this movie of time travel and just great story and something that's completely different and had actors that doing things we wouldn't really be expecting them to do. It was just, I'm there for it.
And that was a big screen movie. Like, it deserved to be seen on the big screen, if you could.
Absolutely.
Weirdly enough, my pick is also from my first movie experience back at the theater, just because that feeling of not being in the theater and not being sure like what's going to happen with the theaters. And so the first movie I saw back at the theaters after, you know, that brief delay was Unhinged. And
that was so fun.
Yeah, it was. The movie was so good. It was so fun. It made me definitely not want to honk at anybody ever again while I'm in the car, because you never know if you're going to, you know, find a mass murderer.
Or Russell Crowe. I mean, you never know.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It was just a lot of fun. And I felt like I experienced adrenaline in a way I hadn't in a long time. And so, you know, like anything, when you're without something for a while and you get back to it, you feel really great. And we had a great experience. We had no problems. Everybody was distanced, wearing masks. We had awesome seats. The popcorn was great. So,
you know what they really should have explained in that movie? You really could have outrun Russell Crowe if you just got him out of the car, because there's no way he could have kept up with you.
That's probably true.
My best TV or movie watching experience was The Conjuring. I rented a whole theater because AMC theaters had this deal because they're trying to make some money in the theaters where you can rent an entire theater with friends. And I rented the theater on Halloween, actually Halloween Eve. My close family and friends all came and we watched The Conjuring. And it was great. And, you know, nobody had to pay. Everybody was socially distanced. You know, there were great distance between them all. We had the biggest theater they actually had available. And it was fun to see a scary, scary movie with your close family and friends in a theater. It just was a wonderful time. Absolutely wonderful time.
That does sound great.
It was. Amanda was actually at that event. John?
I was.
You're in Florida, and I wasn't going to fly you. So, you know, for your safety. For your safety, I was not gonna take the chance.
You know, if you actually liked me, you would have flown me there.
I didn't want to risk you. That's really all it was. Okay, now let's go to the other side of this argument. The worst TV or movie watching experience of 2020.
Oh my God. Okay. So as we all know, 2020 has been the longest 8 years of our life. And I forgot that this movie even happened this year until I was looking back through all of the movies that have come out. And I remembered that I saw The Turning, which is an adaptation of the novella The Turn of the Screw, which is also what The Haunting of Bly Manor was adapted from. And so I was really excited. I couldn't wait to see this movie. And it was literal fire garbage. I hated it. Everybody in the movie theater hated it. Nobody quite understood what happened because there wasn't a real ending. It was just garbage, garbage, garbage. And it was like one of the last, like, I think three movies before the theaters started shutting down. And I was like, this is one of the memories that I'm going to carry with me before theaters shut down. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So yeah, that was really disappointing. And the theater wasn't like, it wasn't the best situation, but it also wasn't the worst. But people just, you know, they just weren't super respectful. And I don't know, it was just, it sucked. The movie sucked.
So it sucked.
Yeah, like I would maybe, I don't even know that I would spend $1 on that movie.
I did not know I was winding the car back up.
You kind of asked for that, didn't you?
That's my own fault. I should have just moved on.
Yeah, you shouldn't have.
The Hunt was the last movie I saw in theaters back in March 2020. Very good movie. It was just the saddest day, just walking out of the theater knowing that I didn't know when I could come back. And like every week that went on that I still couldn't go back made that a sadder day. So it ended up being a day I reflected on very poorly. I just very, aww, very sad as the year went on. Oh, but thankfully, when they opened up and then they closed again, it didn't hit me as hard because by that point, you know, you couldn't make me much sadder than I already have been in 2020.
Your emotions had been through.
Yeah, I was numb. Numbed. Numbed to the pain. Yep.
So for me, the experience is a little bit of a sticky wicket because there's a show on Amazon Prime. The show is called Utopia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I had heard from so many people who I respect their opinions of most things. They said, hey, John, you need to watch this. Okay, why do I need to watch it? Well, you like comic book art and art in general. Uh-huh. Well, that's in there. Okay, but tell me more. Well, it's also got a conspiracy theory thing to it. Okay, I like that. Uh-huh. Tell me more. Oh, and John Cusack is acting in it. Oh, well, I mean, I like John Cusack. That's pretty great. Yeah, so this is totally right up your alley. Okay. Oh, and Jessica Roth is in it. You'll love that. Okay, yeah, okay, I'm sold. So I start watching the show, Jessica Roth, that is, and I continue to watch the show going, when is it going to start getting good? And why did they just... And it never got good. And then the end still didn't get good. It really just hurt me that I spent 8-9 hours of my life watching a show that I did not appreciate.
I totally respect that we normally don't spoil things here, and you totally blew that up, and you just don't care anymore.
No.
Like so
apparently when something pisses me off or something isn't that great, I just go ahead and just like tell you what it is.
That sounds about right. Yeah. And that was very disappointing. That whole scenario was pretty disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about best TV or movie news item of 2020? Mine was going to be when Tenet was released in theaters on September 3rd, 2020, because it was announced several times. And then they said definitely September 3rd. And up until the day it came out, this big budget, giant spectacle of a film in a movie theater that I couldn't wait to see in a movie theater, I did not believe it was going to happen. I just didn't believe. I thought something was going to happen. Some idiot was going to go cough on everyone and ruin my dream. And then it happened. So that ended up being my favorite news item of the year because it came true. And that was about the only good news that really came out of 2020 in terms of movies and theaters.
So mine is going to be something that's going to, Aaron's going to probably like kick a dog when I mention this or something, but
no, I would kick a kitten. I like dogs.
Okay. I'm sorry. Aaron's going to kick. It's going to be like, I'm going to say the words and Aaron's going to go, God damn it. And you're like, meow, that kind of thing is going to happen, which Justice League Snyder Cut.
Oh my God. Come up with something new.
What? You know what? I didn't even think that this was going to be something that I was going to get because, you know, everyone
send
was
more cats.
Yeah, right. So everyone was on the internet going, you know, release the Snyder Cut, release the Snyder Cut. And in my mind, I'm like, this is just hot garbage. There's no way they're going to possibly pull this whole thing off. I don't believe that this is a real thing. And then on what day was it? May 20th? Yes. May 20th, they announced it. That they were going to do a actual Snyder Cut. And
it was
from that
cool.
point on, I got all sorts of really cool news of things that I really enjoy going to be showing up in there. And that was probably the best bit of news I got all year.
To be fair, that's pretty cool news. Like I think it's very exciting for people that are fans like myself. I'm fans. I just don't want to hear about it every week.
Well, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't want to hear about it every week either. At this point, I want to actually try to limit the more I hear because they're like, and then this awesome character is going to show up. I'm like, what? He wasn't even in this whole thing. Yeah, but we're going to throw him in there anyways. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it. Yeah.
Yeah, I picture Zack Snyder saying, all right, I want one scene where it's basically like the cantina scene in Star Wars where just all these characters are hanging out. Like, wait, what? Yeah, I want that to happen. Because now I got all this money and I'm just going to have everybody show up. Okay, Zach, you know, we'll do whatever we want because now we've told the internet we can't take it back. Damn it.
Right.
Amanda, what about you? Best TV or movie news item of the year?
Well, this shouldn't come as a surprise, but when the WandaVision announcement of the date, well, it was originally supposed to be December, then it got moved to January 2021, still not that far away. And that's just exciting for me. I love Scarlet Witch. I love this weird show that I'm not sure what direction exactly they're going with. But I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see it. And it warmed my heart. So that's what I look forward to.
Aww.
It gives me hope to continue on to 2021. That things might get better.
Every once in a while, you sound a little bit like Mora. All right. So let's go into TV. Now, this is where we talk about the awards for television from the year, and we watched so much television because we were trapped. We were trapped and theaters weren't open. Therefore, so much television. But this includes cable, streaming, whatever. Just had to have a new season in 2020. Okay, everybody understands the rules, I hope. First category, best special effects and or stunts on television.
So mine is something of a more recent release. HBO Max's Raised by Wolves. To me, this was one of the prettiest things I've seen on television in a long time. It's something that's done in such a simple and very 1950s futuristic kind of way. I really love the way it came out, and it is just really beautiful to look at. You really do feel like you're on a completely different world.
The style, is that strong for you?
Yeah, the style of it. It's a very own style where they mix like this 1950s futuristic look with this more contemporary like soldier look to it, and it works very well.
All right, well, mine is gonna go to Westworld. I feel like it's hard to beat that show. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And yeah, I mean, to create that, I think it looks wonderful.
Wait, we got more Westworld this year?
Yeah. Can you believe that this year has been so long that Westworld happened? Like only a few months ago?
I did a whole podcast called Beyond Westworld where we covered every episode, John.
I didn't listen.
I'm getting that vibe. I am. I am. But yes, there's season 3, and surprisingly, was a very strong season.
You mean season 4?
No, it was season 3. I know this because I did a podcast about every single episode. It was season 3.
Oh, they announced season 4. Right. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Which doesn't happen until season 3 actually airs.
So, yeah.
Typically. Okay. My best special effects and or stunts is not Westworld, though I do agree, Amanda, that is a beautifully stunning design. It's the CGI used to bring Perry Mason to life because I found it flawless, like literally flawless. There wasn't a moment when I doubted we were being transported back to the 1930s. Now, I've seen some people online say they didn't think it looked good. I don't know what the hell they were talking about because I was lost in it. And I thought it just visually just was stunning to me.
You know what's interesting is all three of us showed up with HBO shows.
It's true. Yeah.
HBO is beautiful. You have to give them the most credit for their effects.
I'll be honest. They're probably my favorite channel for television right now. I mean, and just in terms of overall quality, like it's more must-see TV for me than any other channel.
Hmm.
They deliver some quality. Yeah. I mean, even this year, outside of those shows we already mentioned, they had The Outsider, they had The Undoing. Previously, of course, they did all of the Game of Thrones.
They had Westworld season 3.
So beautiful.
So, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, here's one of my favorite categories. This category is pretty much in both TV and film. Best villain or badass?
This was easy for me. I went with Villanelle from Killing Eve.
Great choice. Wonderful choice. Jodie Comer deserves her own award.
Oh my God, doesn't she?
Mm. Amazing. Amazing. I'm going to actually say this season, as much as I love Villanelle, man, I'm with you. Love her. Stormfront on The Boys.
Oh, shit. We are in agreement.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
I was extremely surprised that I was this engaged. And maybe part of it, Amanda, why Villanelle's not mine is because, I mean, she's basically got it 2 years in a row. And Stormfront was a brand new character for me. And she took me completely by surprise because for like the first 3 episodes, I loved her to death. I didn't think she was anything but just a badass. And then I realized I was horribly wrong. But her performance, Aya Cash, her performance just completely won me over to where it took me a while to even believe she could really be the person she ended up being. So
yeah,
that to me is the best kind of villain.
No, absolutely. I 100% agree with what you're saying about that. Like, she comes on the screen and you really dig her. You dig her vibe. You're vibing with her a bit. She has this great spunky attitude about her. And then she just starts murdering people. And it's just amazing.
Absolutely. Man. Ah, what a fun character. And you know what? Can't go wrong with either one of those characters. Villanelle is... I could just watch Jodie Comer do really anything.
Literally.
Is there a cameo for that? Like, I'll pay her to just do literally anything?
Probably.
I might be in love. It might be a thing. All right. Favorite supporting character in all of television. And I'm saying that in the vein of who my winner is.
Mine too.
But John goes first.
Oh, right. My character is Aidan Gallagher's number 5 in Umbrella Academy.
Oh, okay. All right. Why him?
All right. So Umbrella Academy, the first season, he was a lot of fun in that. But this, they really brought him up to a different level as far as how much fun and engaging that character really is. And he's just so, like, really an old man in a little kid's body. And he does such a good job doing it. And just so funny about it, too. And the whole time he's wearing that school uniform as if it's his only piece of clothing he owns. And it just, you just buy it. And I can't see anybody else pulling off the kind of performance that he's pulling off. So yeah, number 5.
Well, mine is what Aaron alluded his to being. And it's David.
Oh my
from
God.
Schitt's Creek.
Amanda.
No, you get murdered first. No, you get murdered first.
So funny. Why David?
He is so perfect. And one of my favorite episodes of the last season, he pees the bed.
Uh-huh.
I laugh laugh so hard every time I think about it. He is just the most extreme, but he has a level of compassion that you really see in this season. His character is really developed, and you see how creative and smart he is and funny. He is just so damn funny. He makes everything work whenever he is in the near the screen, near the camera. He just absorbs all of my attention.
He is tolerable bitchy. You know, there's bitchy that just is grating and you can't stand it. And then there's tolerable bitchy, which is you're bitchy, but you're fabulous. And I can't deny it. And that's what he was. Like, to me, I am so surprised because, as you all know, I am not a sitcom fan. Everybody thought I was going to hate the show simply because I resisted watching the show, which is fair. I mean,
oh, I really didn't want you to watch it at all.
Which is fair. And like, it definitely takes a while to get into it. But once the characters started actually, like, everybody always says the characters developed. And I'm like, oh my God, every sitcom lover says that. And they never freaking develop. They're the same people, like, throughout. These characters really do actually develop into people. They start as caricatures, which is probably why I didn't really latch on at the beginning. But as it went on and I started to see changes and they started to build, I mean, I really started to understand why people love these characters. But Dan Levy as David is the entire reason I even continued watching the show. And he remains the best, absolute best part of the show. And I don't know, you know, because now I've devoured like tons of interviews of him and he seems like the most kindest, gentlest, genuine person. Like, he really seems very grounded. And to see him and see how genuinely positive he is and just what a wonderful person he seems to be, not like in the actorly, he's always acting like this for interviews. Like, he just seems like a very honest, good man. But to see the performance that he gives, I appreciated his art far more because he also writes the show and he's a producer. And like, he is a creative force with the show. He even picks out all of David's outfits, which are phenomenal. Like, I would wear most of these. And it's amazing.
I want you to. I'm going to take you up on that.
I would. There are so many things where I'm like, I would wear that. And my wife's like, no, you wouldn't. I'm like, but I would. I totally would.
If I could afford it.
Yeah. At times I'm like, maybe I'm pansexual. I didn't know, but maybe I am. Maybe I just haven't fully appreciated myself.
I need a cedar box for all my sweaters.
To me,
I'm trying very hard not to connect with people right now.
I can honestly say I haven't felt this strongly about a sitcom supporting character since Dan Fielding. And I don't say that lightly. Like, that's just how much I love what he's doing in every moment. So if that's overselling it, I don't care. But I really, the other actors are all good and I enjoy them. But if you took him out of that show, I would not have continued watching it and I wouldn't have enjoyed it all the way through. So he makes the show for me.
Aaron. I'm obsessed with this.
Jesus. All right. Now, overall, television, favorite actor. Now, keep in mind, guys, this doesn't mean from one specific show. If you have an actor that is in a couple of shows or something, it's just favorite actor in television for the year. And my winner is Jason Bateman. Because
the man.
The Outsider, he immediately got me to even want to watch the show. I mean, I was kind of getting tired of Stephen King stuff, but I'm like, you know what? I like the book a lot. I want to see what they do with it. And seeing him cast it, I'm like, okay, this could be interesting. And he lured me into just being sucked into this show. And then Ozark season 3, just, man, that show gets better every year. And he is a very big reason why. And I don't think Jason Bateman gets enough credit for what he does, honestly. I think he has grown. You know, I remember him from, God, what was it, Valerie or whatever the hell it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And he was not, and Teen Wolf 2, that classic. You know, he was not a strong dramatic force back then. He has really, really turned into just a brilliant actor, sincerely.
Well, now I wish I would have picked him too, because he's so fantastic.
He's mine! He is mine! He's mine.
I chose Dan Levy. So
we are in agreement, actually.
Yay! He just made everything about this year amazing.
Wait! How do you not pick him for best supporting character, but you pick him for overall favorite actor? But it's Amanda's turn, so that question has to wait.
So I think he was phenomenal in the show. I did see him, and I'm not sure if this really counts, in a movie. And so, you know, he just, every time that I hear his voice, that he is present, that I hear his jokes, it literally has lifted weight off of my shoulders.
That is not what literally means. That it does.
Literally, it's right here. You can't see this weight.
Jesus.
He has made this year so much more bearable. That's true. But he has made everything bearable. He's made it better. He's lightened my life from just being an actor on a show and creating this show. And so for me to feel like my life has been improved in some way because of this actor says a lot about them and how talented they are.
For me, the reason why he's my favorite actor of the year is because I probably spent, with the very few exceptions, more time with Schitt's Creek and David than I did with anybody else, and it has everything to do with Dan Levy. You both nailed it on the head. He made this character that was supposed to be a caricature so much more approachable, so much more enjoyable, and he had, and as a creative force, he created these characters that all turn from being caricatures to actual people, and not only actual people, but full-fledged people that you'd want to have in your life. And there's so much to be said about someone who can not only act, write, direct, all these things. Why wouldn't I pick him over anybody else as far as my favorite actor of the year?
Which brings me back to the question, John, but why wouldn't he be best supporting character? Is the character better in Umbrella Academy? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, no, because to me, Dan Levy's character is not a supporting character. He's the star.
But he is a supporting character.
You guys keep saying that, and I know he got an award for best supporting character, but I don't think Eugene Levy is the star of the show, and I don't think Catherine O'Hara is the star of the show. I think he's the star of the show.
Well, I think.
Well, he doesn't think so because they have to submit their own names under the category.
I don't care.
I mean, definitely Eugene and Catherine think they're the stars of the show because that's what they submitted. But you know what, John? It's your award. You just go ahead and give it out as wrongly as you like.
I will do what I please.
All right. Speaking of probably wrong, what is your best specific moment on TV this past year? This means a specific moment that occurred in a TV show or event.
The ending of Bly Manor.
Oh, okay. All right.
You have that moment where she turns the chair around, she faces the door, she sits there, and she starts to fall asleep. And as the camera pans back or pulls back, you see the hand resting on her shoulder. Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was a great moment. That was.
Yeah, really good pick.
Yeah, I just wish the show was as great as that moment. Okay, my...
Wow.
Yeah. Guess which one is not in my top 10. What? All right, so my moment. In Ozark, and at one point in episode 9, I believe, Wendy Bird is forced to make a decision on what to do with her brother. And that decision, I'm not going to say what it is, but it leads to one of the most heartbreaking moments on TV for me in forever. It affected literally almost every character in the show, including my beloved Ruth. I love you. I love you. And I'm not sure if I honestly ever recovered. And much of that has to do with how brilliantly Tom Pelfrey played Ben for the entirety of season 3, because all that worked up to that moment. And it was just a heartbreaking scene.
We are in this together.
Oh, same moment?
Yeah, that moment was gut-wrenching. And I feel like there's been so many different things that you've felt for Wendy's character or about her character. Mm-hmm. And when this moment happens, you kind of forget all of those things and you just feel sympathy for her. And because she really is grieving through something terrible. And you can't believe that anybody would ever make – she's made some horrible choices, some horrible decisions. And normally you just get angry at her. But here it feel like there's a level of emotion that she took this character to that really made you feel for her. And it was something that I didn't think that I would ever do because I don't like her. I don't like her character. I haven't liked her from the beginning. She's always just been a biatch and not my favorite, even though she does make some choices that are beneficial, but overall not a fan. And so for me to feel that for her character, and I think you're right with her brother's character itself, the way it was built, it was just such an emotional and powerful moment.
It all worked. Because they had built Ben up so well to get you understood why she had to make the decision she made, even though it was just a horrible thing to behold. You know, I mean, it was one of those where I get it, but you're still awful, but I get it. You know, I mean, it's just like such a teeter totter on what is the right call on this. It was just, oh, it's very, very difficult. Whew. All right. Now we go to the Coherence Award. If you're new to our show, the Coherence Award is named for Justin McCumber, who passed away many, many years ago. He found a film called Coherence, and he brought it to our listeners' attention, and everybody responded because they loved it, because nobody had ever heard of what he was talking about, this film Coherence. And he even went out and sought an interview with the director, and we had that, and really caused that film to gain some traction just because of that. So we've named the award after him. We have it in both television and film. And this is a personal pick for a little seen or discussed TV series that just completely won you over this year, and you hope more people find it in the new year. So, John, what is your winner of the TV Coherence Award?
For me, it's going to be Raised by Wolves. It's not something that I feel like a lot of people were watching or a lot of people wanted to watch. I watched it on a whim only because I was like, well, I think I finished all of Netflix. Let's start over here now. And as I was watching it, it was something that I felt like in the first episode, I wasn't sure if it was going to be something for me, but it started to grow on me. And it really started to tell me an interesting story that I don't think has been told before. And or at least the way they're telling the stories in a way that hasn't been done before. And I really grew to appreciate what they were doing. It goes a little crazy on the final episode, but I'm still very interested to see where the story goes from here.
All right. Very interesting. My pick is The Stranger on Netflix. It's a fun little 8-episode series about a stranger who's offering up secrets about a wife and the husband who goes hunting into what all of the secrets mean. And it's based on the Harley Coben book. It's just something where it's a fun little thriller that you aren't sure where it's going, and it just keeps going deeper and darker and deeper and darker. I really, really enjoyed that. The Strangers on Netflix.
That was a good show.
Oh, sweet.
And my choice is Prodigal Son. This is actually a show that Aaron brought to my attention. I had remembered seeing some trailers and previews for it, thought it looked really good, but just never got around to watching it. And he just kept saying, this is going to be something you're going to like. This is going to be something you're going to like. And he sure enough was right about it. And it was, you know, it's waiting for its next season, which I believe comes out in 2021. So really great show about this psychological investigator. And he is basically he goes on these different cases. And his dad is also a serial killer. So there's this really strange dynamic, but his dad is prolific in what he did. And there's mysteries that this guy needs to unravel from what happened with his dad. And it's just very engaging and it's very interesting. And I love the way that it's unraveled.
And what's the name of this classic again?
Prodigal Son.
Okay. I just like to hear it because I recommended it. All right. Now, here's a category we just threw in this year because, you know, we watched a lot of TV. What was your best TV COVID throwback, aka old favorite that you watched to feel better about never leaving your house? Well, my pick, I rediscovered Monk, which is ironic because it's about a germaphobe who never leaves his house. But I started watching Monk again from start to finish. I hadn't seen it in years. It used to be like comfort TV, but I hadn't really watched it again in many, many years. And I don't know why it felt good. In a year of a pandemic, I felt like this is the guy who understands me. Like he just gets what we're all going through. And he just basically solves a murder every week if you've never seen it. And it's on Amazon Prime if you want to stream it. It just made me feel a little bit better about all the insanity, all around us that was unfolding. And then a cool little bump to that is that because they were doing all these reunions and stuff, the Peacock channel came out and they actually got Monk to do like this Tony Shalhoub and the Monk cast to do this fun little 5-minute reunion video, basically promoting Peacock, but it was also Monk in a pandemic. And it was just like, it just brought it all together for me. I just loved it. It was like Monk 2020 for me. Loved it.
That's a good one. Aside from rewatching Schitt's Creek more times than I can explain or count.
Same.
I mean, that was really like my pep bring me up TV show. I started getting back into Grey's Anatomy. And I know this seems like, why would this show kind of make you feel like you're like things are normal? But I think I talked about it on a previous episode. That's a show that I binged when life was normal. And despite everything that is, you know, it's a medical show and that could bring you back to thinking about everything that's going on this year. It didn't. The drama is so intense and real that it takes me away from everything else that's going on here because I get to invest in other people's problems. And it was just fun. I even got my boyfriend to start watching it. And that doesn't something I would never expect any man to find interest in. So it's a comfort show to me. It's like chicken noodle soup for the soul, I guess. In a very weird way. Very weird way. Because people die a lot on that show.
Yeah, I don't get that one. That one just made me sadder. But whatever works for you. That's what we're going with. Hmm. What about you, John?
So my show is something I decided to discover this year, I guess. Titans came out in 2018. They had their last episode in 2019. And it's one of the shows that premiered on the DC Universe app and is now over on HBO Max, which thank you, HBO Max, for bringing me this. I watched the first season, which I found enjoyable. However, it felt very cheap. You know, it's just that first season was just like told a really good and interesting story. However, they did it on the cheapest budget they possibly could. And they introduced you to a lot of characters that they haven't been able to bring to you before on the television when it comes to, and this is a Berlanti-verse, well, Berlanti-ish kind of show.
The television. He's like my grandma. On the television.
Right. So I enjoyed season one. I stuck with it for seasons two. And season two blew my freaking mind. It's probably with the exception of whatever Joe Mangiello is gonna Mango Jello is gonna pull out for Snyder Cut, probably the best depiction of Slade Wilson I've seen on screen. The action was awesome. They put a much bigger budget into it. The story was great. They threw Connor Kent in here, which Connor Kent is like a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor kind of smashed together into this lovable idiot who has anger issues. And it is such a well done show, especially that second season. I was really impressed by it. And it was really worth my time.
I really intend to check that out this year. I really do.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the time. Like I said, the first season is one of those things where I kind of soldiered through, even though the story was good. The budget's not there and it's a little frustrating, but the second season's definitely hot.
Okay, guys, it is time for your top 10 in television. Now, how we do it is mention your top 10, but only elaborate on your top 5. Manda, you go first. Your top 10 in TV.
All right, let's start at the bottom. We have Defending Jacob at number 10. Number 9, The Outsider. Number 8, Little Fires Everywhere. Number 7, The Queen's Gambit. Number 6, Killing Eve. Number 5, Cobra Kai. Was so much fun to find that and finally watch and binge it and catch up on it. And I can't wait for more.
I was sitting here going, does that really count? Because it's older, but I forgot. It just dropped on Netflix. So, okay, I could see that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Ooh.
Well, for a lot of people, that's new. So, you know what? I feel like it's a weird technicality that you...
And my number 4, I'm going to go with The Haunting of Bly Manor. I know I talked a lot about this show and prior to its release, the very unfortunate disappointment of the movie The Turning and the novella that it's based off of, which is The Turn of the Screw. I absolutely loved this, had a lot of fun with it. I think it was a brilliant direction to take it, and I enjoyed the acting. I know some people are a little bit less partial to this second season of the Haunting franchise series television show thing, but I still loved it, so it landed on my list. Number three is Lucifer. That show has really just grasped my attention. Yeah, I love that show so much.
I had no idea you love Lucifer so much, but Tom Ellis is a dream.
He is. He is. He's very charming in his devilish ways. And the story just, I mean, can I get the rest of this season already? Come on, people, hurry up. Number two is Ozark.
I mean,
goddamn, that show is so good.
Yeah, it is.
And number one, of course, is Schitt's Creek.
Number one, huh?
Yep. That's, I mean, it's down in my like top shows of all time now.
Wow. It's amazing to me how many people have latched onto that show. Really, like.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel bad for the cast because they never got to cash in. Like, it just became super popular when it hit Netflix. It's just
when
like,
it ended.
They didn't have any chance to really get those checks. Huh, it's funny. Okay, so nice job. Nice top 10. Mine's better. So number 10, The Mandalorian.
Meh.
What?
Oof. No, it's not the Mandalorian.
Really?
Mandalorian. Yeah. It's my top 10, bitch. Yes.
Mandalorian.
Just for that Ahsoka Tonar, whatever the hell her name is, episode, it's worth it. It makes the list just for that. That's how good that episode was.
Yeah, I mean, you got a point there. That whole with Ahsoka and yeah, that's... That really caught my attention. But yeah, I'm still a little surprised it's on your list.
Hey, my list. Don't judge. Number 9, The Queen's Gambit. Number 8, Upload. Upload was a really fun show.
Oh, that one almost made mine too.
It was a really fun show. Number 7, Schitt's Creek. Number 6.
Wow, it made your list.
It did. It did. But it didn't make my top 5. Number 6 is Bosch, a show that was so good that I actually watched the entire 6 seasons because of COVID. So thank you, COVID. Appreciate that. But Bosch is a great show on Amazon Prime. Definitely check that out. Number 5. Okay, so number 5 is The Undoing. That really took me by surprise. I was pleasantly surprised by Nicole Kidman's performance. Hugh Grant didn't really surprise me. I mean, he's a great actor. He always has been. But the ups and downs of that role were really just fascinating. And I think he nailed it. His performance is what the whole show is based around, and it's wonderfully done. Number 4, Perry Mason. I love the original, the OG Perry Mason. And when they came out and basically said, we're going to make this prequel to Perry Mason, I was a bit skeptical. Originally, it was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. that played him. Instead, we have a different actor who's doing a damn fine job. But the character itself is played so differently than what we're used to. I mean, he's very foul-mouthed. He's kind of dirty, down and dirty, a little nasty. And for the first couple episodes, I had a hard time coming to grips with, this is not my Perry Mason. But after I kind of got past that and the story kind of found its groove, it became just an absolutely fascinating show. And by the end of the first season, you really start to see the Perry Mason we do know and love. So it's becoming the show I would like it to be. It evolved very well, and the story was riveting the whole way through. Number 3, The Outsider. I mean, we talked about a little bit. Cynthia Erivo is fabulous as Holly. She really makes that show. She is the whole reason I would even watch a season 2 if they ever find somewhere to land with a season 2. But I really feel like it's a one-season show. Like, I feel like they nailed it. They don't need to do anymore, so I'm good where it is.
Agreed, but she was incredible.
She was
like,
great.
I fell in love with her.
She's absolutely great. She's a great actress. I'm sure she has a ton of prospects in her future. Number 2, The Boys, season 2. Because what was happening that whole season was just nuts. And then it was like the best roller coaster ride ever. And I loved how it ended. And I loved how ego was played with throughout the entire season. I really felt like we were also mimicking many current events in the season. I mean, it was just like, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy how great that season was. but it wasn't as great as my number one, which was Ozark season 3. That was one of the best things I've seen on television. The ending still made me about piss myself. So it's just a fabulous show all around. I mean, I'm on pins and needles and I'm like, how are them Duke boys going to get out of this one? And they keep finding a way. I love Ozark. I love Julia Garner, especially. I just think she is one of the best actresses. Watch The Assistant if you can find it, just for her performance. I just love watching her, and her character, Ruth, is fabulous to watch. That's my top 10 for TV.
All right, so my top 10 for TV starts with number 10, Trial by Media, which is on Netflix. It's a docuseries about different court trials that happened, but media played such a huge part in the outcome of them. Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
Really glad that came back this year.
Yeah, we didn't mention that one, but the second half wasn't as strong as the first half.
I didn't think it was as good as the first season.
Yeah, I still appreciated both seasons, but this having it all together is nice to have.
Sure.
Right.
So, The Outsider follows that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Raised by Wolves.
Hmm.
Then Umbrella Academy at number 6.
I was wondering where this was going to land on your list.
See, I don't agree with that one being on your list, because I don't think that's a great show. So there. Now I ask how you like it. You don't like it, do you? It's not nice.
Okay.
But you are on record saying that Mandalorian is just kind of meh.
This season is better than the first season. I'm on the record as the first season. I think this season is better.
Did you watch the entire rest of the season since the last time we talked?
It's been
the last time we talked.
I'm not talking to you anymore. Continue.
I feel like John got you.
I think he's remembering an earlier conversation. But you know what? Whatever. I enjoyed it. And there's a lot of TV that I didn't enjoy that just wouldn't have made my top 10. So
moving right along, Lock and Key. I almost forgot this happened this year.
I didn't like that one.
I loved it. I thought it was really great. I thought that the way that they pushed the danger for a group of kids was a la the 80s movies where they put kids in really adult situations. The way they trusted these characters to make it through these situations that were way too out of their league was pretty great. So yeah, I enjoyed it and I had a lot of fun with it. Then I have Upload.
Woohoo.
At number 4, which, what else can I say about that show? It's just a lot of fun. It introduced me to Andy Allo, which I will be forever thankful for that show. I will love to see her in anything else. Then I have The Boys, because The Boys is just diabolical.
And more C words than you can even come up with. I mean,
like, hey, Aaron, don't be a
Okay, I'll try.
Number 2 is Schitt's Creek, because again, this is just a show that I did discover this year. I didn't like it the first couple of times I watched the first couple of episodes, but somehow I kept on going. I don't know what it was that made me keep going, and then all of a sudden I fell in love with everything that has to do with the show. I fell in love with the relationships in the show. I fell in love with the characters. I fell in love with just all the storytelling. And it is like chicken soup for the soul, which is something I keep on returning to, so it deserves to be my number 2. And my number 1, surprisingly, is my number 1, and not you, not Amanda's, but Bly Manor is on my list as my number 1. And the reason why I love that show so much is because I went in there thinking I was going to watch this jump scare horror flick kind of show. And we got that for a little bit of time, but then it evolved into this beautiful love story that I felt for and appreciated the entire time. And I keep on thinking about how much care and thought was put into this show. And that's why it's my number 1.
I respect it.
Man, I can't tell you how much it bothered me that I couldn't put it on mine. Like, legitimately, that's how much I loved Hill House. I was just like, this should totally be here. But it didn't for me. But I'm glad it made yours, because I know you love that show.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get another version, The Haunting of something, something. So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm hoping we get something good.
We will. We'll get something else. Now it's time to go to movies for our movie awards. And this includes video on demand, streaming channels, theatrical, whatever, as long as the movie released in 2020. Now, the first category is the COVID category. Delayed release that impacted you the most. This is a movie that moved to 2021, and it just made you sad. Or moved right, in
so
in
I
general.
Get to go first on this. Yeah. So what I'm going to actually do is I'm going to drink my drink and Aaron's going to say it for me.
Wonder Woman 1984?
No, King Kong versus Godzilla.
Just kidding. Everybody already knows that.
I was going to say, come on now.
Yeah, it's Godzilla versus King Kong.
Come on, son.
That's all he cares about. I don't even think he knows any other movies are coming out next year.
No, I don't. That's the only one.
Did you hear that they were...
There are no other movies.
They were talking about... Netflix offered $200 million for that movie and HBO said no.
I don't know how to feel about this. I'm really...
I'm with you on this one. Adam Wingard directed that one, so I'm... really looking forward to that. That's a good choice. My delayed release that impacted me the most is No Time to Die. Because, I mean, we were almost freaking there. And then COVID, yeah. You stupid bitch, COVID. You ruined my year. Everybody's year, really. But really, right. This is about me.
More importantly, Aaron's year.
Exactly. I see those movies with my dad. Now, my dad's a snowbird, so now I'm not going to see him until probably after it finally comes out. And that's just going to make me really sad if I can't see it in a theater with my dad. So screw you, COVID.
I have less emotion with mine, but Spiral. I was really looking forward to seeing that movie this year. I thought it looked great. I was really excited for it. And sure as shit, it got delayed.
It'll be out soon. Probably.
Maybe.
All right, now we get to our real categories. Best use of a worn-out movie cliche or plot. I get to go first on this one, and my answer is there's a film scenario that we've seen a bazillion times before where youngins get trapped in a house, and there's an unseen threat outside, and they don't know what's going on, but they know there's danger afoot. And Dave Franco took that scenario and amped it up to an 11, where I'm literally still terrified to stay in an Airbnb in the rental. And if you haven't seen this, watch it, and then you won't want to go on vacation anywhere. You'll kind of give it up for a while. You'll just be like, thanks, COVID. So that's what that movie did for me. It took a really tired, tired plot and really sexed it up a lot.
That movie is amazing, first of all. And there is this movie that I believe is on Hulu called Run, and it's this concept of Munchausen by proxy.
Oh, yeah.
Which has been done and done and done again. And I don't want to tell you how it makes clever use of this common plot twist, or plot device, but it adds in this really unique twist to it, and I just thought it was really great. So if you haven't seen the movie, you should go check it out.
That's Sarah Paulson, right?
Yes. She's fantastic.
Yeah. I've heard nothing but good things about this.
Right. So my cliche is girl loses guy, so she goes off to prove that she doesn't need him. And it's Birds of Prey, the fantabulous emancipation of
Yay.
Harley Quinn.
Oh, my God. That also has the black mask scene at the end is just so like, where did that come from? That's over? Okay. Yeah.
No kidding.
It's a much more fun film than I think people give it credit for.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good call. Best physical effect or stunt. This is not special effects. This is just physical effect or stunt in a movie in 2020.
I went with a Netflix film with Chris Hemsworth called Extraction.
That's fun.
Yeah, and it's following the apartment building sequence where he's trying to escape with this kid.
Oh,
and
yes.
They have that street fight.
That was so good.
Where the dude gets hit by a truck.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a really, really great action-packed scene with the two of them fighting.
Oh, it's
that whole car chase is a practical mm-hmm. effect, and it's just done by the director hanging off the side of a freaking truck on a platform with a camera in hand, doing that whole thing, and that's why it feels like it's all one shot.
Super bonkers, yeah.
That was so cool. That was really cool. I wish I would have thought of that. That's a great one. Yeah, good pick. And here's John to screw it up. What do you got?
Tenet, the driver versus driver fight.
Oh, that's a great one.
Which one?
Yeah.
In Tenet, when driver fights driver.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was just sitting here going, wait, what are you talking about? Oh, right. I totally forgot about that. That was smart, yeah.
Yeah, as far as like a physical acting goes, when the person comes out of that thing wearing the whole costume and the way they're moving and fighting, you can tell, eventually you tell, oh, wait a minute, that person's actually moving in reverse the whole time. And fighting somebody who's moving forward, and it's just incredible how they did it, and it's just so well choreographed.
Well played.
Great. I think you guys definitely trump mine, but mine was from 1917. It's the final trench run as Schofield kind of zigs and zags and does all his things there at the end. I hope you guys know what I'm talking about. There's explosions going off all around him. I mean, it's almost entirely practical. I thought it was almost all CGI until I looked at it, and it's actually almost all practical. And it's riveting in the movie, but actually to watch them film it is insane, because there are literally things exploding around this man. And I'm just like, how is that safe? That does not feel safe. But it's a wonderfully impressive shot and scene.
That is so well set up and executed. When you watch them do that whole thing, you're just blown away by what they're able to accomplish with just planning absolutely every little bit of that shot out.
Exactly. Yeah. And for people who are like, that came out in 2019. No, actually, it came out in 2020. It had a very, very limited release in two cities, so it qualified for the Oscars, which is why it got an Oscar. But for us, we're not the Oscars. So it came out in 2020. All right. Now, best use of CGI in any film.
So this one is going to be, for me, one that I don't think it's the biggest use of CGI, but to me it is the best use, which is the Invisible Man in The Invisible Man.
Great call. Yeah, that's a fantastic call.
We've seen that whole, ever since the advent of CGI, we've seen them do Invisible Men, and we've seen them come up with ways to show that the Invisible Man's there or not there. And it always looks very CGI-ish. They pulled it off in such a way that I am convinced there was nobody there, even though we know that there's, you know, especially if you watch the after credit stuff or you watch the making of stuff, there's somebody wearing a green suit standing there doing the stuff they need to do.
Oh man, the scenes where she's being choked and stuff were so well done. And then you see them shoot it and she's actually getting choked out by this dude in a green suit. I'm like, well, no wonder that was so well done. She's actually being choked. So great choice. Yeah.
That is actually my choice as well. I loved that movie. I thought it was an excellent way to make you feel like something was there and creep you out in so many ways. Even the footprints in the bedroom, I remember that. And especially the scene that you both just mentioned where she's being choked. I thought it was just phenomenal. And it does make you feel like she's just acting this whole thing through without anybody being there, because it was so well done.
Yeah. In fact, I still remember when I saw the movie, I'm like, oh, that just totally looks like she's trying. I mean, I swear to God, that's what I thought when it first started. I'm like, well, it looks like she's trying to fake fight. And then you know, as it gets in, you get into it, and you're like, oh, I don't know, man, she's doing a great job if that's what she's doing. And then you go see the making of it, and you're like, holy shit, that was actually a real dude. I am bad at deciding what's an effect and what's not. So it's very, very well done, especially for such a low budget movie. I mean, it's like a $12 million movie. This is not a big budget movie, and just great effects. I kind of wish I would have went with you guys, but I went with the one that really stood out to me, which was Sonic the Hedgehog, because I remember what that thing looked like before.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's all I could think of in this whole category. I'm like, I remember that trailer, how awful it was. This is the one-time fan
outrage.
Yeah, this is the one-time fan outrage really worked.
They had it right.
Yes, they actually got it right. Oh, man. All right, so best villain or badass. Now, my pick from this is a movie called The Hunt. Betty Gilpin as Crystal Creasy, who is this just hillbilly derelict who gets picked up. And boy, did they call it wrong. They basically picked her up and they decided, we're going to have some fun picking on the poor people. And they picked the one poor person who's a badass. I mean, she's such a badass. She makes Van Damme proud, because this is totally the hard target plot. And she just beats the shit out of everyone. And she's smart. She's calculated. She's forward thinking. And honestly, I would love to see that character continue in another movie.
I almost picked her, but what beat her out was Kevin James's Dominic from Becky.
Now, I haven't seen that. You said he really delivers, huh?
Okay, so for me, Kevin James has had like a whole new cycle of life for me because I discovered his YouTube channel, which is a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, you kept sending me those videos for like a month.
Yeah, he does these great little skits, and everything he does is really kind of entertaining on that. But this character as Dominic is something so far from anything he has ever done that it's almost hard to believe, with the exception of you can't hide the fact that you're looking at Kevin James. It's hard to believe that he is anybody else, and he is scary, he's calculating, he is manipulative, and he is just every bit the white trash monster that he could possibly be, and it works so well.
I gotta watch that. I really do.
Well, mine is a basically second to Aaron's, Betty Gilpin in The Hunt.
Woohoo!
She was so cool, man. I remember watching it the whole time. Like, she is such a badass.
You know, what's funny is as much as it was a sad thing to see that movie and know that the theaters were closing, I'm glad it was that movie because it's a really enjoyable movie and she was great.
It was so fun. Yeah, that was a really good one.
But I felt I felt horrible for her career because that movie didn't get a chance to play. And I think it really would have found an audience because that really felt like a movie where word of mouth would have helped it. And then Glow they didn't get their final season because of COVID. I was like, man, she just had two blows in a row and she's a really strong actress. Like, she deserves more acclaim.
Well, as bad as I feel about Glow, she did get her full paycheck.
Good. They should have. It was just ridiculous.
They all did.
But I'm sure they all prefer an ending too. They would like to have an ending.
Yeah.
Best supporting character.
This one, it took me a second and then I was like, how did I even think on this? And I don't know if you guys are going to feel the same way or not, but I went with Sacha Baron Cohen's Abby Hoffman in The Trial of the Chicago 7.
That's a great choice. Yeah, absolutely. Why do you think him?
He just was really compelling and was in a year where you have Borat 2 and then you have The Trial of Chicago 7 and you just see how talented he is and how much he, not that I knew these individuals, but I felt like I knew his character. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like I could really connect with it. And you felt everything that he was feeling. And he was funny, but he was also engaging and he was strong. And it was a really amazing performance that I truly did not expect.
That is a great choice, Amanda. And in fact, I think him or Mark Rylance both deserve like separate awards at the Oscars this year. But my pick is from The Devil All the Time. Robert Pattinson as Reverend Preston Teagarden. He is just this charming manipulator with really zero heart, but an impeccable accent. It's honestly one of the best performances I've seen from an actor in a long time. I was so impressed with his performance because he completely gets lost in that character and made me forget about Twilight forever.
He was a character that made me feel gross.
Yeah, well, he should. He was a gross guy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's really hard, I think, for an actor to be removed from something that they were typecasted as, and him with his Twilight performance, and then to take me into a completely different type of performance where I'm supposed to be disgusted with him, and I am, but then to take me back out and I don't see him as that disgusting person. You know how sometimes, like, even Joffrey Baratheon, you would see that actor and be like, oh God, screw him, because his character was so despicable.
Absolutely.
But for me, it was like, no, this is just his character. Like, I'm still able to separate and understand that he's so talented that he was just invested in this role. It's very weird, but I just thought he was incredible. And yeah, he made me feel really gross.
I really enjoyed him in Tenet, but my character, or my best supporting character, is actually Dan Stevens' character of Alexander Lemtov in Eurovision.
Thank God.
I forgot how much you love that movie.
Me too. And I'm still mad at you for talking me into watching it, but go ahead. Dan Stevens.
Did you watch it?
I watched 45 minutes of it, and then I said, fuck John Davenport, and then I stopped. It's not for me.
Wait.
A lot of people loved it. I am not one of those people.
So wait, was Utopia Payback?
No, I really thought you would enjoy it. And I hadn't finished Utopia when I recommended it.
Anywho, I do love Eurovision. I think it's a great movie, even though Aaron doesn't appreciate it. And Dan Stevens makes it so much more fun than it needs to be. It's just by him being that character. I think I might be watching it for Dan Stevens. I don't know.
I do agree. Dan Stevens is really one of the most underrated actors working today.
Yeah.
Like, he is so multifaceted, like just across the board. He really is. Good pick. Good. I mean, you didn't say Will Ferrell yet.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't say Will Ferrell. It would have been like from that movie, it would have been Amy Adams or Dan Stevens.
It would have been weird because she's not in it. Rachel McAdams is, though. Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean.
Two totally different.
That's the same person, thing. Right?
Yeah. Like
one's got a different first name and a Mick in there. But yeah, same thing.
The same thing.
Overall, for the year in movies, favorite actor.
You know, I couldn't go with anyone other than Kumail Nanjiani from Lovebirds in this. And the reason why I picked him was because he really showed me in that movie that I can really want to watch him in more things. Sure, he had his movie that the Big Sick, which he was very fun and engaging, but it's basically his life story that he was doing there. And this movie, he was playing a different kind of character. And again, he's just somebody who I want to see on screen. I really enjoyed him in that role. And he's not somebody who is something different than what he really is. He's just like an everyday kind of guy. And it's easy to see yourself as him.
It's really just because he showed that picture of him with his new abs, right?
That doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Well, mine is Charlie Plummer. He was in Spontaneous, but also Words on Bathroom Walls. And that's the performance that probably stuck with me more than any other of this year, just because he takes on the role of a schizophrenic and makes it relatable, which is very, very hard to do. And I don't know if anyone in film has done it as well as he has. And I know he probably won't get an Oscar nomination, but I really hope he does, because I think the kid was just mesmerizing.
Yeah, that is a fantastic pick. I actually considered that one, but I decided to go with Jessica Roth.
Can't go wrong with that one. From Valley Girl?
No, you really can't.
Yeah, for Valley Girl. I loved that movie. Mm. It gave me so much joy. And I feel like when I saw her in Happy Death Day, I didn't really consider her for a role like this, for like a prissy romantic type of role.
Because
I just saw her as very badass and cool and like kind of a downer, to be honest, because that's what her character was. And when I saw her in this, I was like, wow, she just really has a wide array of talent. And she can make you feel like, damn, this is never going to end, or wow, I hope this never ends. You know what I mean? Like in the best of ways for both. Oh, so
yeah, we definitely, I mean, John just told you how her leaving the show ruined the show for him. So yes, she matters.
Yeah, she does matter. So
she matters.
Oh, yeah, I can't fault you for that. I mean, I want to see her in everything, literally. Best specific moment in film. This is well, I think I just explained it.
I thought a little bit about this, but I don't know. I had a hard time picking one for this. So I went with The Old Guard, and I went with The Plane Fight, because Charlize Theron was a lot of fun. She was, I mean, she's always super cool. But it was really funny because she's basically, this is the part where she's locked up on the plane, and she decides to shoot the pilot, and I was like, oh, I guess you're gonna have to unchain me now. And then they get into a fight on the plane, and I just thought it was so ridiculous and awesome, and I loved it. I mean, anything with Charlize is amazing. So
yeah, that was fun. There's a lot of fun action scenes in that movie.
Yeah, there definitely really are. My favorite moment is the evidence room fight in Harley Quinn's movie, because I'm not going to call it the Birds of Prey, the Emancipation of da, 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 da. It's Harley Quinn's movie. The
Birds of Prey. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where she's just using everything in the evidence room. Oh, that was fun.
That was pretty incredible.
That was
pretty
and cool. Then they shoot up the cocaine pile, and then she's basically snorting cocaine in the middle of the air, and she just loses her crap on everyone.
Oh, I love it. I love how they made an entire movie based around her obsession with food and getting over a bad breakup. Like, that's really the entire plot.
It literally speaks to my soul. I loved that movie so much.
I think it's meant to
be. I really love the fact that they wanted to call the movie The Birds of Prey because of like the DC characters, The Birds of Prey, but still made it a Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally a Harley Quinn movie. I mean, yeah. And they really should have just called it Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey from the beginning.
Right.
It would have been made much more sense. All right. So my best specific moment in film. I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. I'm not throwing away my shot. That whole musical number is my favorite moment in film. I don't love the movie slash play slash whatever you want to call it, but I do love the soundtrack. And I can't deny that it's not just intoxicating to watch. It's just, I think it's way too long. Like, it's about...
Thank you for making me sing this song now in my head.
I haven't stopped. And they did, like, so many... reunions and stuff this past year, and on Some Good News with John Krasinski, the whole cast reunited to sing that to some young girl who was supposed to go to Hamilton for the first time ever, and then the play canceled because of COVID and everything else, and they reunited to sing to her, and I just like to sing, that was a different song, but still, like, just all these little Hamilton moments that popped up, and I wouldn't have known about it if I wasn't hooked by that one song. Because that's the song that really got me into finishing the movie. Because I was kind of like teetering until that moment. And then I'm like, I'm in. You got me. You got me. I still think the damn thing is way too long. But that the soundtrack is undeniably fantastic. So that's that. And I haven't stopped singing that stupid thing. It's on my running mix. I mean, you know how weird it is to have a musical pop up and you're singing a musical song while you're running? It's just odd. But I do it. Okay, now our second Coherence Award, because we do one for TV and we do one for film. What is your Coherence Award for film?
My Coherence Award for film is Becky. I think more people need to go see that movie. It's a pretty dark and intense movie. However, it's just a lot of fun, and I thought it was great. So, again, go see Becky.
All right, mine is I Used to Go Here. It stars Jillian Jacobs as a writer whose book was so poorly received that her book tour is canceled. And so she heads back to her old college where her old professor and crush, Jermaine Clement, offers her a live reading in class. And she ends up like meeting up with her fraternity members and reliving her youth. And she's trying to figure out how her life went so wrong after she left college. It's really charming. It's really funny. It's one of the better comedies I've seen this year, and nobody is talking about it. So again, I Used to Go Here. Community is Jillian Jacobs. So if you know Community, you know her. She's a very funny actress, but she really gets to kind of expand in this. And I really think it's a very good film that people should find.
So my Coherence Award is going to The Way Back. This is the Ben Affleck film where he was a basketball phenomenon. Like, he was incredible, and he ended up forfeiting everything. And he decides reluctantly that he's going to take this job coaching at the school where he used to play, and it's like his last shot. And so he has his own personal struggles with, I'll let you watch that and figure it out, but he has a lot of things in his life that he's trying to battle and deal with, and it's one of my more favorite Ben Affleck performances. I think he was incredible here. I've only heard maybe one or two people talk about this movie, and I just think it's something that you have to watch. It's so good. It doesn't matter if you care about basketball or not. It's really not about the sport itself, although that is like the backdrop for it. It's much more about redemption and trying to come back and who you are and the things that shape us. So I would definitely recommend that you watch The Way Back.
All right, now, best movie COVID throwback, a.k.a. it's an old favorite that you watch to feel better about never leaving your house. Mine is Jaws. I know it's weird, but I saw Jaws at the drive-in. I saw it over 4th of July weekend. I mean, I saw Jaws like 3 or 4 times this summer, and every time it just makes me feel like a kid again. But seeing it at the drive-in specifically was a great memory and moment to just take me out of the COVID nightmare and just remember there's simpler times. So it's Jaws. It's just weird, but that was the one.
Mine is a favorite, and that is Scream. I love that movie. I know the entire movie. I know what happens. It's fine. It's still great. I still love it. And it always makes me, I don't want to say it makes me, it puts me in a good mood, because that would be pretty dark and twisted considering people die. But it's just a fun one for me. And I just love the movie so much. It's so quippy and clever, and I never get tired of it.
Mine is one that I've probably mentioned before, but it's something that I, every time I feel homesick or want to feel close to my family, I watch Basic for some reason, which is a great John Travolta movie.
Yeah.
And it takes place in Panama. And I just, for whatever reason, that's the one I keep going back to. But it is a great movie. And that's Basic.
Well, you're from Panama, so it makes you think of home, I would think.
Yeah.
It makes sense. All right. Now it's time for our top 10. I'm excited. Now, remember, same thing like with TV. You can mention your top 10, but just elaborate on your top 5. John, you go first. What do you got? I'm interested.
My 10th movie, number 10. That's how I want to say it, I think. Is Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey. My 9th movie.
I feel like that's too, Love and Monsters. That's too low for you. I feel like as many times as you mentioned it, it should be higher. I'm just letting you know.
It should be. However, there's so much other things that I thought were pretty great on here.
Okay. Number 9. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
So my number 9 is Love and Monsters.
So good.
My number 8, Spencer Confidential, which is something I didn't bring up before.
Good. I'm glad you mentioned it. That was a fun movie.
Yeah, it was a really fun movie. I really do love that one. My number 7 is The Hunt, because, hey, who doesn't want to shoot some people?
Especially rich people.
And they deserve it. My number 6, The Old Guard.
Okay.
My number 5, The Invisible Man. I didn't think they were going to find a way to make me interested in the idea of an Invisible Man movie. I was wrong, and this was so well done. I really loved every single minute of this, and I'm glad I gave it the time I did. My number 4 is The Babysitter, Killer Queens. I love this series of movies. There's 2 of them. They're just so much fun. They take everything that's about the whole like Scream Queen kind of thing, and they turn it on its head and give you something a little bit different, a little bit fun. And it just makes fun of itself the entire time as well. So it's a great fun sit, especially during times of dark and dreary. This is a lot of, I just love it. My number 3, The Lie on Amazon Prime.
Oh, good. That's a fun movie.
That one was good.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That movie was incredible. You don't know what you're looking at the entire time. And then there's this reveal and you're just like jaw on the ground. And it's just so well done.
John, I think the moment you're referring to, I was going to pick as my favorite moment in like a single moment in film. But it's such a big spoiler that I did not want to do that to people. Yeah. But it's incredible. And you're just like, holy shit. What?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
My number 2 is Becky. I've mentioned it a couple times already. I can't say it enough. It deserves to be my number 2. It's such a great movie. Go watch it. I'm sure that you'll have fun with it to some degree, and or just like appreciate that it's something that is out there in the world. And then my number 1 is Tenet. I don't think I need to say anything else about Tenet, do I?
Best movie of the year, huh? All right.
Well, starting at number 10 for me is 1917.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, The Lovebirds. Number 8, Hamilton. Number 7, The Hunt. Number 6, Freaky. Number 5, The Invisible Man. Loved that movie. Number 4, probably a surprise, Happiest Season. Number 3, The Rental.
Mm.
Number 2, Valley Girl. And number 1... The Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey.
Wow.
Which part are you wowing about?
The fact that it's her number 1.
I've watched that movie probably 3 or 4 times already this year. And I'm not somebody who rewatches movies a whole lot, but I have so much fun with it. Margot Robbie is perfect. And oh God, I just love that movie. There's so much about it that I love.
That's really great to hear. I really do like hearing that.
All right. So my number 10 is Love and Monsters. I was as surprised as you. My number 9, Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey. Made all 3 of our top 10s. I bet you won't see that on other people's top 10 list because other people suck. Number 8 is 1917. Number 7 is Promising Young Woman, and why that one is even on my list when my score was a little lower when I reviewed it from other films this year. it's simply because the ending really has stuck with me, and it's been a few weeks and that ending is still in my head. And to me, that's a sign of a great film when it can resonate with you long after you've seen it. So definitely Promising Young Woman is number 7. Number 6, along the same lines, is Hunter Hunter. I also reviewed that a few weeks back. Holy shit, that thing is still in my head. That last 15 minutes might be some of the most visceral filmmaking I've seen in years. So definitely find Hunter Hunter. Now it's time for the top 5. Number 5, probably my happiest surprise of the year, because it was delayed, and it was, threes never work. Bad Boys for Life. I had so much fun seeing Will Smith and Martin Lawrence team back up and kind of play to each other's strengths. And there's actually a lot of heart in this one. And Martin Lawrence really, really delivers the heart of the movie. I was really surprised by that because I'm so used to just, ow, Mike, ow. That's really, the first two movies. Really, that's all the acting in both of them. But here, Martin Lawrence really expanded and really brought some heart to it. So Bad Boys for Life is number 5. Number 4, The Devil All the Time. It was kind of like a movie I don't see anymore. It really threw me back to like John Grisham thrillers or just like A Few Good Men. I don't know, just those classic dramas that we don't really get anymore, where the whole story's connected and it really shouldn't work because it kind of bounces back and forth in time a few times. And I don't love Tom Holland as an actor, but he's very good in this. And it just, everything clicked and the film worked, and it worked beautifully. And I was really entranced the entire way through. And Robert Pattinson, I can't say it enough, like, just impressed the hell out of me. Number 3, The Invisible Man. I mean, I love Lee Whannell already as a writer. And between this and Upgrade, I think he's one of the best directors working currently. And he's doing great work with no money. The Invisible Man, again, has like no budget, and it looks like a big budget movie. And that he is one of the few directors that will frickin' allow a scene to play. If this was a big studio movie, the whole opening scene of Invisible Man would not have been allowed to be played out as slow paced as it was. And that slow pace is what built everything that came after it. It was like the building block for all the tension that came after it. If you don't have it, it doesn't work. And he trusted in his story, and so did Jason Blum, the producer. So it works. It just works great. I freaking love that movie. The number 2 movie of my top 10, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Just wonderful acting across the board. It's Aaron Sorkin. I love his dialogue. And my God, was it timely. I mean, really, in a year of sincere protests and uprising and people saying we're not taking this anymore, this movie speaks to people that fight for their beliefs. And I absolutely loved it. I mean, I just thought it was just brilliantly told.
Man, I had so much anger watching that too, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to not. No, I mean, you watch it and there are some liberties with any drama taken, but it's. A lot of it happened the way that they said. And as a movie, it's just freaking riveting. Just absolutely riveting. Number 1, Words on Bathroom Walls. I talked about it before. It's just beautifully told story. And it's about schizophrenia, which is never really given fair representation or fair explanation. And definitely doesn't have the performances to match. And this one does. So it was my favorite movie of the year. It was a huge surprise. I did not expect to love it as much as I did. I saw it twice in a theater in a year when you didn't even really go to the theater. So that's how much I found that movie to be powerful.
No Wolf of Snow Hollow, huh?
It literally was number 11.
Okay. All right. I was waiting for it. I was like, it can't be this high on his list.
Between that and Love and Monsters, I could not freaking decide. And by the time I actually do my write-up, it might have switched again. So There's a chance when I finally do my year-end write-up, Wolf of Snow Hollow sneaks back in. But man, it was so close. It really, really was. Like, it's been on and off my list the entire week. We've been preparing for the show. So there you go. Can I have a tie? Then I'll have a tie. There you go. I'll put that in as a tie. Because that is a very good movie. Okay, now for the listener top 10 in TV. The listener top 10 in TV, that is number 10, Dark. Number 9, What We Do in the Shadows. Number 8, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. Number 7, Ozark. Number 6, The Crown. Number 5, Schitt's Creek. Number 4, The Umbrella Academy. Number 3, The Boys. Number 2, The Queen's Gambit. Yes. And number 1, John and Amanda, is The Mandalorian. And it wasn't close. Wow. Mandalorian, John. Huh?
No.
There you go.
Mandalorian.
No. Oh, it really pulled it all out when Ahsoka showed up, didn't it? And mentioned that name that she mentioned.
Whatever. Okay, now from our listener poll, the top 10 in movies. Number 10, Birds of Prey. Or Harley Quinn and blah, 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 blah. So just Birds of Prey. Number 9, Bad Boys for Life. Number 8, Tenet. Number 7, big surprise, Enola Holmes. Number 6, Eurovision, The History of Fire Saga, also known as Garbage. Sorry, you guys love it, so I gotta shut up. Number 5, Extraction on Netflix. I mean, I knew that thing was popular. I did not know it was that popular. Number 4 is Soul on Disney Plus. Number 3, The Trial of the Chicago 7. That's from Netflix. Number 2, The Invisible Man. Number 1, and we had a nice little debate on if 1917 counts, and the people say it does because it didn't go wide until January. It was only in a handful of theaters up until then, like we talked about earlier. The number one movie, according to listeners, of 2020 was 1917.
I disown all of them.
All of them?
Yes. Anybody who does not vote for Birds of Prey does not deserve to listen to this podcast.
Yes, you can. You really do deserve. I mean, it's free, so you deserve free. Really. Really.
But I'm angry with you.
You know, listeners, I appreciate you for everything you do.
I do, too.
With the exception of Mandalorian.
Mandalorian. Make that stick.
Stop it. Oh, goodness.
I can't help it. It's meh.
All right. Now, we took all of those lists from Facebook, from Amanda, from John, myself, listeners, all of those lists. We threw them in a blender and determined, based on the average and placements in all lists, what was both the whole TV series of the year, the whole movie of the year, and also the whole streaming network of the year. We're going to do the streaming network first. Netflix. Who's surprised by that?
Nobody.
Not me.
In a year of a pandemic, Netflix has really become an essential life skill, I think, at this point.
My best friend.
Yeah. I mean, really.
A security blanket.
I like Netflix more than I like most people at this point.
Yeah. Netflix really gets me.
It's like, here's what saved me in 2020. Netflix, booze. Those are the two things that kept me going.
Right.
How many people in America now have a drinking problem? That's what I want to know. Are you ready? The Ho TV show of the year was so overwhelmed by votes from listeners that it didn't matter what John and Amanda thought, and it wins. The number one TV show of 2020 is The Way, The Mandalorian. Yes, it is. Did not see that coming.
Schitt's Creek is the only answer.
Okay, Amanda, you win. Yep. And the number one movie of the year, the whole movie of the year, is The Invisible Man. Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, look, Tenet again. I can't believe it.
It was not Birds of Prey. It was not Birds of Prey.
Bastards.
Nor Wolf of Snow Hollow. So I should probably just go back and add that to my list. I almost actually tried to find a way, because I'm like, maybe I should exclude 1917 just so I can get Wolf of Snow Hollow on here. I probably should have. Yeah, whatever you're going to do. All right, well, that's going to do it for our awards. But guess what? We have a whole teachable minute, but we're going to do it after we close. So remember, guys, the next time you head into a theater in 2021, buy popcorn. Now, if you're sticking around, guess what? We've got something for you. This is our whole teachable minute of 2020. What was the biggest lesson you learned in any capacity from 2020? Amanda?
Not to take anything for granted.
Explain.
Well, I mean, just everything from concerts to movies to game nights or, you know, anything like that. Or just, I don't know, going to the apple orchard and taking pictures and everything that you would normally do in a normal year was deviated, changed, ruined. You know, like there were so many trips I was supposed to go on this year, including Hawaii, and all of those things got changed. But it also, at the same capacity, made me, like, forced me to feel very grateful for the things that I do still have that other people don't. So I'm trying not to take the things that I do have for granted. And definitely I'm going to savor some traveling memories when they happen next.
That's good.
I like that. Traveling memories are important.
Very good. Oh man, as soon as they start opening stuff up, you won't even see me anymore.
We're all gone.
I might take a month off this podcast just to go do stuff.
We'll have to call this the traveling outsider. Where did you go this week? Well, I went to Ireland and we did this.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Oh, that's my dream location.
It is really a magical place.
Hmm.
My teachable minute is something like I find to be very personal to me, which is the kind of things like I had a come to Jesus moment with myself in 2020. And that come to Jesus moment really came to realize that I make a lot of the driving factors in why I do things and why I try to improve on things. I make them, the driving factor is always to make somebody proud. It's always to, and that's just, like, unfortunately, I think that's just how I was raised, which is I always try to make somebody proud of me, somebody to, you know, if I think I'm going to do something in a certain way or make a certain accomplishment, I always think that all those things are things that will make somebody proud of me, love me more, appreciate me more. And in the process of these last couple of years, which I've talked about my weight loss and I've talked about how much I've enjoyed it, I realized that I like who I am more since I've actually lost the weight. And I also realized that I've been doing a lot of things for all the wrong reasons. So if 2020 has taught me anything, it's taught me to go fuck those people off and just do it for me.
Hey, I like that.
Alrighty then.
John's 2021 advice, fuck those people off. That means so many different things to so many different people. my lesson, I guess, from 2020 is don't follow the dominoes anymore. And what I mean by that is, you know, I learned first off, and just stay with me, that you can't trust any mainstream news site at all. You just can't, actually, any news
site. Fake news.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sadly, it's been willed into truth. Just none of them. You can't trust them. There's so many agendas. And then those agendas feed into fear being instilled into people. Oftentimes irrational fear that led to so many people suddenly being experts on diseases, race relations, politics, what's best for me and my family and just about everything else in the free world. Terrifies me for our future. So to me, like, if you take that, it all starts with at the beginning and then it just becomes a domino effect. So my lesson is to not follow those dominoes anymore. I'm not going to fall victim to that domino effect. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of everybody thinking they're an expert without doing any real research. Everybody telling, you know, I'm just done. I'm just done with that. I will talk to people that whose opinions I trust and whose research I trust, and I'll have conversations with those people. I'm done trying to argue with people that just refuse to listen to reason. Feel what you want to feel, but facts are facts. Like, I'm just done trying to discuss and debate facts. If a fact is a fact, it's a fact. That's it. I'm not going to debate it anymore. This is a provable fact. This is not an opinion. I'm not going to discuss those anymore. I'm just tired of it. So I'm not going to get lost in those domino effects. And thank God, I thank all that is holy, I have movies and TV to get lost in. Follow me? You guys get what I'm saying, right?
I get what you're putting down.
Yep, it's been picked up.
Okay, excellent. All right, so that's going to do it for us in 2020. And then we'll be back officially with our movie and TV release extravaganza that we do every year, which last year turned out to be Bubkiss because they closed everything down. But hopefully things will be a little bit more back to normal. We'll be back. Hey, you know what? We never get a time to say this, but thank you, Amanda and John, for doing the show all year. I don't think you guys get enough credit for sticking with this when it was very, very hard to do the show. This, and we, I think, delivered a lot of fun. So thank you guys.
I know I did.
Like, yeah. I allow you to grace my presence with free entertainment.
And doing most, if not all, of the work.
You guys help more this year, so that's good. We're growing. My goal in 2021 is to basically just call in from various travel locales as we change the format completely. Because it's time to change the format, people. We're going to the Traveling Outsider. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I'm all for that. You guys are paying for traveling expenses, right?
Yeah, let's see what that Patreon can really do.
We really need the contributions right, bad. really do. And Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. And I do want to say, you know what? Whatever the rules are, have fun with people.
But like, be safe,
too. Make out with a stranger. Don't even wear a mask.
Oh, my God. That is just too far, John.
Both of you wear a mask. Just cut a hole for your tongues. What?
Ew, right. What? There that's weird. Same, what if you get fine. A paper cut or something?
That's going to do it. We're out. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Mwah.